the secret rhythm, our human heart beats passionately close. And then she assures him. You see, it's one of the beauties of poetry that it should not be clear to you like a primary reader of the first standard. Oh, I know everything about it. Then it loses all its charm. There must be some haunting, teasing lines. You go back to them again and say, what is last time I tried to understand it? I didn't understand it fully. Maybe I should understand it this way or this way. This playing around of your consciousness, your understanding, teasing, the poem kind of teases you, tries to make you rise higher and higher. That should be the case. Otherwise, you know, they say, Dante's Divine Comedy, no two pundits agree on what the lines mean. But there are no two opinions. That's one of the greatest poetic achievements in the Italian language. Similarly here, a great poetry doesn't mean you understand every line and you can give a prose commentary of every line. That's not great poetry. It touches you, it stirs you, it amazes you, and very often you do not know exactly what it means. And there are many, many lines in Savitri of that kind. And that's a hallmark of great poetry. But the poet doesn't do it deliberately. See, these lines come like that. The poet also is a medium who receives these lines from some other source, and he just receives them and puts them out. They used to say about the great English poet Browning that when he wrote the poem, only two people knew the meaning of them, of his poems. Presumably the poet himself and the Lord up there. He says, now I have forgotten what the poem means. Sometimes this can happen with great poetry. So don't feel nervous that if you do not know exactly what that line means. You see, there are 23,800 odd lines. So if you do not know exactly what three or four lines mean, I don't think you should lose your sleep over it. So, now, let us see what Savitri says, because Satyavan was afraid that Savitri had now become too divine, too great, etc. And can I still approach you in my simple, earthly, human way? She says, still am I she who came to thee amid the murmur of sunlit leaves upon this forest verge. I am the Madran, I am Savitri. As far as you are concerned, I am still Ashwapati's daughter, Madran, whom you had first seen on the verge of the forest, the same forest, but at the other end. So I am still the Madran. I am Savitri. All that I was before, I am to thee still. Close comrade of thy thoughts and hopes and toils, all happy contraries I would join for thee. All sweet relations marry in our life. And the last line, I am thy kingdom, even as thou art mine. You can't improve upon these lines. I am thy kingdom, even as thou art mine. The sovereign and the slave of thy desire, thy prone possessor, sister of thy soul, and mother of thy wants. It's a very interesting way of putting it. If you love somebody, and love the somebody fully and wholeheartedly, it's not just one level of relationship. You envelop that person from all sides. You mother that person. If you are a male, you are father that person. So the relationship, he says, prone possessor, sister of thy soul, mother of thy wants, thou art my world. The earth I need, the heaven my thoughts desire, the world I inhabit and the God I adore. Most men would like to hear the last part. Then they feel happy. The God I adore. So he says, I am all these things to you. I am sister of you, of thy soul. When there is a spiritual anguish, who can understand it better than the person you love? And what kind of a balm can she return to you? Sisterly advice, sisterly concern, mother of thy wants. It's a very touching sight. I won't name those people. I'm sure when they were young and fell in love and got married, I know this for certain, they fell in love and got married. Their parents didn't force them into this union. That much I know. I was not even born. But now they are around. And they go to the dining room, hands locked in hands like this, walk together. Why do they walk together? Because by themselves they can't support themselves on their legs. It's a wonderful sight. This togetherness, this coming together, supporting, they don't want to show it off to the world that we love each other. It's not that. So this kind of love, love is not one level, one side. It's all kinds of relationships. He says, therefore, I am your sister, I am your mother, I am your companion, I am everything to you. Always been like that. Thy body is my body's counterpart, whose every limb my answering limb desires, whose heart is key to all my heartbeats. This I am and thou to me, O Satyavan. I don't know if Sri Aurobindo had seen these lines carefully once again, how much of these he would have retained, or probably he might have corrected. This belongs to the first version of Savitri written between 1916 and 18. Our wedded walk through life begins anew. No gladness lost, no depth of mortal joy. Let us live our wedded life once again without losing anything in it. Let us go through this new world that is the same. For it is given back, but it is known. A plaything, playing ground and dwelling house of God, who hides himself in bird and beast and man, sweetly to find himself again by love, by oneness. This world has now meant something different to us. Love is the way by which the many is slowly trying to realize its oneness. You see, the Vedic way is to say the world began when the one wanted to be the many. So the one became the many. But the many were lost in their manyness. But the purpose is to bind all these many by one's golden thread and make them aware they are the many manifestations of the one. And what is this golden thread? That golden thread is called love. And that's why love is the supreme spiritual virtue. And conjugal love is only one aspect and one manifestation of this love. Most of us think conjugal love is the greatest because that's the only love we know. And as long as we know only that love, we only know love as an exchange. Once the exchange aspect of love disappears and you love unconditionally, you love because you can't help loving, that begins the spiritual movement which binds everybody, which makes everybody aware that we are all a manifestation of the One Supreme. So he says, now you and I inhabit the same world, the same forest, the same birds and the same trees and the same animals. But now we look at them differently. How do we look at them? A playing ground and dwelling house of God. This is a dwelling house of God, who hides himself in bird and beast and man, sweetly to find himself again by love, by oneness. His presence leads the rhythms of life that seek for mutual joy in spite of pain. We have each other found, O Satyavan, in the great delight of the discovered soul. We have found the truth of each other. We have found the meaning of each other. Let us go back, for Eve is in the skies. The worldly wisdom only comes to the woman. She says, we can't be here forever. It's getting dark. Our parents must be worried about us. Let's go. Let's not stand here looking into each other and admiring each other. This we have done enough of this. Now we must go and meet our parents. It's already getting dark. Let us go, for Eve is in the skies. Now grief is dead and serene bliss remains. The heart of all our days forevermore. Now there is no reason for us to grieve anymore. Grief for us is dead. Our hearts are full of joy, full of love. All that we now have to do is to spread this joy, spread this love and encompass the whole world in this. That's the new challenge. That's the new tomorrow for us. Let us begin, therefore, a new life, a new wedded life. Let's go. Lo, all these beings in this wonderful world, most of us, most of the time, have some complaint or the other against the world. But I've known people who just before they're ready to leave their lives, give up their lives, suddenly have realized, and they have said this to the people around them, now I realize what a wonderful place this world has been. As long as you look at the world with the eyes of the ego, the world will be full of potholes like our roads here. President Kalam came, they decided to clean the roads. They cleaned the roads all right, but all the potholes suddenly began to surface. So our life is like that, our world is like that, because we look at it from the point of your ego. But once that's gone, sometimes you get this grace. You look around, look at the same world and say, what a wonderful world this has been. I have not met those people. I have heard about such people who have said this just before this last thing they said, before they breathed their last. Because temporarily, momentarily, they were just lifted up and they looked at the world as it really is. And so Savitri now says, lo, all these beings in this wonderful world, this world is wonderful, she says, let us give joy to all, for joy is ours. For not for ourselves alone our spirits came, out of the veil of the unmanifest, out of the deep, immense, unknowable, upon the ignorant breast of dubious earth, into the ways of laboring, seeking men, two fires that burn towards that parent sun, two rays that travel to the original light. We have suddenly, Savitri realizes that we are these two lights that burn towards the original sun, and we have not just come here just to while away time for no purpose. We have a purpose. What is it? To lead man's soul towards truth and God, how we are born. We are here for what? To lead man's soul towards truth and God, we are born. To draw the checkered scheme of mortal life into some semblance of the immortal plan. Now if you look at life around us, it all looks like the five-year plan of Government of India. Not when it is prepared, but when it is finished. Everything is disjointed. The world looks totally disjointed. And Savitri says, it is our purpose to put this world back into some semblance of order and meaning and purpose. It says, to draw the checkered scheme of mortal life into some semblance of the immortal's plan. We must make the world look like what God wants it to look like. That is our purpose. To shape it closer to an image of God, a little nearer to the idea divine. So, this is Savitri's response to Satyavan's anguished cry. She does admit that she means to him all that he meant to her before. But the context of life has changed. Their life has now been invested with new meaning, new purpose. And the fulfillment of their love now would mean accomplishing this purpose and not building a little nest and feathering it every day with warmer and warmer straws. That's what we do. Build a little nest and bring some straw from somewhere here, some from Singapore, some from America, put it all in our nest, make it warm and warm and warm. As a result, what happens is the things that you bring become too heavy and the nest just collapses. We are here. Our love now has to find fulfillment in bringing the world closer to God. Making the world look as if it has a scheme, it has a plan, making it closer to God's purpose. This is what he says. That's the purpose of our love. So, she closed her arms about his breast and head as if to keep him on her bosom worn forever through the journeying of the years. So saying, she clasps him very closely as if he would have his head on her breasts forever and ever. So for a while they stood entwined, their kiss and passion tranced embrace a meeting point, in their commingling spirits one forever, two-souled, two-bodied, for the joys of time. It's as if they took two bodies, became two souls, for the joys of time, so that time could take delight in their being two different beings. Then hand in hand, they left that solemn place, full now of mutual, unusual memories, to the green distance of their sylvan home, returning slowly through the forest's heart. So, hand in hand, they now decide to walk back to their hermitage, full now of mute, unusual memories, to the green distance of their sylvan home, returning slowly through the forest's heart. Around them, the afternoon to evening changed. This has now become closer to night. Light slipped down to the brightly sleeping verge, and the birds came back winging to their nests, and day and night leaned to each other's arms. So Sri Aurobindo, when his mood is on him, can just close it like this, and bringing everything to a close. We have just one more section left, where Savitri and Satyavan are reunited with their parents. We will witness that jubilant scene after we had. This may be, looks like the last session of our first cycle of Savitri reading. Of course, from tomorrow we will go back to Savitri in a general way, looking at various areas until the end of this study camp, but the physical reading of it, which we started some years ago, I wish Savitri were at least 150 pages longer. It didn't get 50 pages longer, partly because of Hitler. The Sri Aurobindo was too busy during the Second World War fighting that menace. Otherwise, probably if he had a little more time, all those years, 40, 41, 42, 43, 45, were also very productive years for Savitri. But a great deal of his time was taken up by the occult war. But anyway, we have here more than what we deserve, so I don't think we should complain. Now this last section is, as I said, is the reunion In fact, it is not the last, but the last but one section. There is a very last section. This section talks about the reunion of Satyavan and Savitri with their Satyavan's parents. Now, in the original Mahabharata story, in Vyasa's version, this part occupies about 300 lines, at least 300 lines out of a total of 700 lines, this part. What happened, who said to whom, what, etc., etc. But as I told you in the morning, Sri Aurobindo is not interested in this part. So he very briefly describes what happened. Now the dusk shadowy trees stood close around like dreaming spirits, and delaying night, the grey-eyed pensive evening heard their steps, and from all points the cries and movements came of the four-footed wanderers of the night approaching. So, as they started moving out, it was getting dark, and naturally in the forest, the animals are stirring about. The grey-eyed pensive evening heard their steps. The evening looks pensive, and the evening heard the steps of the four-footed wanderers, all the animals in the forest, approaching. Then, this is only to be expected in a forest, you hear animals roaming around. A human rumor rose. Then you heard a tumult of voices, human voices, long alien to their solitary days. But the human voices are not normally heard in these forests, and therefore he says, long alien to their starry solitary days, invading the charmed wilderness of leaves, once sacred to secluded loneliness, with violent breaking of its virgin sleep. The human tumult, various voices, this is a search party organized by Dhyumatsena, Satyavan's father and his wife. Satyavan's parents have raised a search party. And as you know, as Savitri was busy in her encounter with the god of death, she had managed to procure a number of boons from the god of death. And one of the boons was that Satyavan's father, who was blind and exiled from his kingdom, should get back his sight and should get back his kingdom. And that has now happened. So the Dhyumatsena, who is now leading the search party, is not a fumbling, old, blind, exiled Dhyumatsena. He is now at the head of a regular search party of soldiers on horseback, and a huge army behind him looking everywhere, and that's why this tumult. And also, they were living in a forest, so all the ascetics, all the munis, all the people who had settled down in the forest, they are also come because they are also very anxious to find out what has happened to Satyavan and Savitri. So this was the tumult. But as the poet says, a forest is not used to hearing all this noise, the human noise. So the virgin silence of the forest was disturbed by these voices. Then a rumor, human rumor rose, long alien to their solitary days, invading the charmed wilderness of leaves, once sacred to secluded loneliness, with violent breaking of its virgin sleep. Through the screen dusk it deepened still, and there neared floating of many voices and the sound of many feet, till on their sight broken as if a colored wave upon the eye, the brilliant, strenuous, crowded days of man. So, as the evening was becoming darker and Satyavan and Savitri were advancing through the forest, suddenly they saw a whole sea of people life topped by a flaring multitude of lights. They were all holding flares, light, for them to find their way through the forest. Topped by a flaring multitude of lights, a great resplendent company arrived. Resplendent because the lights they carried with them. Life in its ordered tumult wavering came, bringing its stream of unknown faces, thronged with gold-fringed headdresses, gold-broidered robes, glittering of ornaments, fluttering of hems. Hundreds of hands parted the forest paths, hundreds of eyes searched the entangled glades. Now where did all this, hundreds of eyes, hundreds of hands, and all these gold-fringed headdresses, gold-broidered robes come from? They came now because Jubatsena had once again regained his throne and he had become a king. So a king can only order. A whole section of the army had set out with all their weapons and horses, etc. It is this tumult. Hundreds of eyes searched that entangled glades. Calm, white-clad priests. So these priests were there in the forests doing various kinds of tapascharya. They also joined. Calm, white-clad priests, their grave-eyed sweetness brought. Strong warriors in their glorious armor shone. The proud hooved steeds came trampling through the wood. So, soldiers on horseback, then these priests and warriors wearing shining armors. The entire party was advancing. In front, King Dhyumatsena walked. So leading this search party was King Dhyumatsena. No more blind, faltering limbed, but no more blind and therefore faltering limbed. He was very firm limbed now, determined steps he was taking as the leader of men. But his far questing eyes restored to all their confidence in light. So once a blind man gets back his sight, his confidence is restored. So he is a new Dhyumatsena now. Took seeingly this imaged outer world, firmly he trod with monarch steps the soil. So he now walked like a monarch, not like a blind, exiled old man. By him, that queen and mother's anxious face came changed from its habitual burdened look, which in its drooping strength of tired toil had borne the fallen life of those she loved. Dhyumatsena's wife was not blind, but she had to bear the load of suffering that had befallen the loved ones. Her husband, once a king, had lost his kingdom. He had become blind, and they had to look after this son, young son in the forest hermitage. So her face always wore this kind of visage of gloom, sadness, that she was living amidst people who were deprived of their rightful deserts. Her husband should have been a king. So her face always used to be like that, full of sorrow, full of sadness. That face has suddenly changed now. And Sri Aurobindo describes beautifully, it looked like the western sky, the sky in the west just before sunset, which is red, which is glowing, which is beautiful at that time. Why? Because the sun, not because the sun is sinking, but the sun is sinking with the assurance that he will come up again tomorrow morning. So this night hides behind it the promise of another day. So just that's why the evening's face is bright and expectant. And Dhyumatsena's wife's face now was like that. By him that queen and mother's anxious face came changed from its habitual burdened look, which in its drooping strength of tired toil had borne the fallen life of those she loved. Her patient paleness wore a pensive glow. It's a glow of the evening sky, pensive, thoughtful, like evening's subdued gaze of gathered light, departing, which foresees sunrise, her child. Just as the evening expects to see the sun born again in the east the next day, Yumatsena's wife was expecting to see the sunrise in the form of Satyavan, because she had come looking for Satyavan. So her face was all expectant. He will be seen any moment now. That's the kind of expression she wore. Sinking in quiet splendors of her sky, she lives a while to muse upon that hope, the brilliance of a rich receding gleam, a thoughtful prophecy of lyric dawn. Her eyes were first to find her children's forms. It is Satyavan's mother was the first one to set her eyes upon Savitri and Satyavan as they were advancing towards them in the evening's gloom. Her eyes were first to find her children's forms. But at the vision of the beautiful twain, the air awoke, perturbed with scaling cries, and the swift parents hurrying to their child, their cause of love now who had given them breath, possessed him with their arms. As soon as they saw them, they all rushed towards them, uttering various kinds of cries, and held them, embraced them, both Satyavan and Savitri, by these parents. Then tenderly cried Yumatsena, chiding Satyavan, "The fortunate gods have looked on me today. A kingdom seeking came, and heaven's rays. A kingdom came looking for me, seeking, and also came heaven's rays. The eyesight was restored to me. But where wast thou? Where have you been? You are not there to share this moment of great fulfillment and joy. Without you, this is all meaningless for me. The kingdom and the eyes, etc., have no meaning without you." So he says, "Where wast thou? Thou hast tormented gladness with fear's dull short shadow. Oh, my child, my life." The fear for your life. We didn't know what had happened to you. That had completely marred the joy, the happiness which would have been ours at this moment when my eyesight was restored to me and my kingdom was restored to me. What danger kept thee from the darkening woods? What is it that kept you back? What kept you busy all these hours? Oh, how could pleasure in her ways forget that useless orbs without thee are my eyes, which only for thy sake rejoice at light? He says, how could you forget that I and my wife, just live for your sake? If you are not around, I don't care whether I can see or I am blind. It doesn't mean anything to me at all. You are so precious to me. And at this moment of great rejoicing, you are just still missing. What held you back? What kept you back? And then he turns his attention to Savitri and says, "Oh, Savitri, this is quite unlike you. Sometimes Satyavan can get a little involved, lost in the moment, but you always had the sagacity, wisdom, and you always guided him back to us. What happened to you today? Not like thyself was this done, Savitri, who ledst not back thy husband to our arms." You always led him to our arms. Today you didn't do it. "Knowing with him beside me only is taste." Life has taste only when Satyavan is with us. If Satyavan is not with us, life has no taste. "Knowing with him beside me only is taste in food, and for his touch evening and morn I live content with my remaining days." My remaining days, if they have any meaning, it is because Satyavan is with us. If Satyavan not with us, nothing means anything anymore to us. But Satyavan replied with smiling lips, lay all on her. She is the cause of all." He was not telling a lie, he was not telling a falsehood. This is true. She is the cause of all. If it were not for her, Satyavan would now have had another address beyond all email. So he simply says, lay all on her. She is the cause of all. What is interesting is, Satyavan's parents don't understand this, why he says that, but you and I understand it. Why she is the cause of all. Lay all on her. She is the cause of all. With her enchantments, she has twined me round. It is true. She has held me captive in the net of her enchantments. I am a prisoner of her enchantment. And even when I strayed into the kingdom of the dead, she didn't let go of me. She pursued me, she followed me, and the enchanting web of her love enveloped me and brought me back safely. That's what he wants to convey. Behold, at noon, leaving this house of clay, this body, at noon, I wandered in far-off eternities. I didn't know where I went, whom I met, but I just wandered off. Yet still, a captive in her golden hands. But all the time, I was aware of the fact that she was holding me firmly in her palm. I tread your little hillock called Green Earth. Now I am back on this little hill called the Green Earth. They say the first astronauts, when they shot out of the orbit of the Earth, looked at this Earth and said, what a little small village is it, global village. So, Satyavan had a similar experience. He was not on a space vehicle. Nevertheless, he has visited other worlds, and from those worlds he has seen this Earth. And now for him, this Earth is no more than a little hillock called Green Earth. So I am back on this little hillock called Green Earth. And in the moments of your transient sun, live glad among the busy works of men. I am back now again on Earth. I am in front of you. All this, she is the cause. It is her enchanted charm that held me captive, was kept me safe, and brought me back safe. So when he says that, then all eyes turned their wondering looks where stood a deepening redder gold upon her cheeks. So when all eyes are focused on her, and she becomes the focus of attention, Savitri's cheeks become redder out of what? Embarrassment, shyness, whatever you call it. A deepening redder gold upon her cheeks. With lowered lids, the noble, lovely child, and one consenting thought moved every breast. When everybody looked at Savitri, they were unanimous in one thought. Everybody had the same thought. What was it? What gleaming marvel of the earth or skies stands silently by human Satyavan to make a brilliance in this dusk of eve? Who is this standing by the side of Satyavan? A kind of figure never seen in heavens nor on earth. Who is this? Of course, many of them had seen Savitri before, but she had changed. There had been a transformation in Savitri, not only the inner transformation, but also the external being has been transformed. So they all look at her and they wonder, who is this divine figure? That's the thought everybody had at the same time. What gleaming marvel of the earth or skies stands silently by human Satyavan to mark a brilliance in the dusk of eve? As the evening gathers, darkness deepens. Who is this? This is a figure of great illumination and light and splendor. Who is this? If this is she of whom the world has heard, if this is that Savitri, wonder no more at any happy change. Anything and everything that can happen in the world, I can easily believe in it, because she must be the source of all these wonderful things that happen in the world. So everybody is convinced that she must be the source of all that ever will happen in this world from now on. All the magic change that comes man the beasts grow suddenly man the divine. Even if that happens, we now know who is the cause of all this. It is this person. So he says, if this is she of whom the world has heard, wonder no more at any happy change. Don't look surprised anymore, because as long as Savitri is around, all these things are only to be expected. All these miracles will happen. Each easy miracle of felicity, of her transmuting heart, the alchemy is. If any miracle happens on this in this world, she must be the chemist who must be bringing about this miracle, the alchemy of her heart. What is the alchemy of her heart? The love of Savitri. Savitri, the love that she has for mankind is so powerful, not only in its intensity, but then also in the power it can bestow on people, that by that love alone she can bring about all these miracles. So she is the source, she is the power, she is the cause of all this. That's what everybody instantly feels, intuitively feels. Nobody has described this to them. As soon as they see Savitri, this is the feeling they all have. So he says, if this is she of whom the world has heard, wonder no more at any happy change. Each easy miracle of felicity, every easy miracle of felicity, of grace, of love, of goodness, of beauty, all is due to the alchemy of her heart, due to the chemistry of her heart, and everything draws from her heart. Then one spoke there who seemed a priest and said,